Good evening and welcome to the Oral Valley Town Council regular and study session, October 18th, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven council members present. Mr. Standish, if you'd read items one and two of the executive session.
Pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 and A4 for legal advice and direction regarding Leibowitz v. Town of Oro Valley, and executive session item number two, pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 and A4 for legal advice and direction regarding Lowe v. Town of Oro Valley.
I move to go into executive session with the town manager, deputy town manager, town attorney, legal services director, attorney from Humphrey and Peterson, PC, representing the municipal risk pool, and the town clerk.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go into executive session. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. We'll resume the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, October 18th, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven members of council present this evening. If you would please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The October 19th Stormwater Utility Commission meeting has been canceled, and then the Planning and Zoning Commission will be holding a special session on October 23rd at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers, and then the October 25th Board of Adjustment meeting has been canceled. And then on November 1st at 6 p.m., the Town Council will hold a regular and study session here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We have Mayor and Council reports this evening. Councilmember Jones-Ivy will recognize Carson, who is an eighth grader at Wilson K-8. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
I'd like Carson to come up with me. It is really an honor, young man, to introduce Carson, and his last name is Castiglia. Did I get that right? Okay. He's an eighth grader at Wilson K-8. And since enrolling in Wilson as a sixth grader, Carson has shown dedication and leadership in his academic athletics as well as community activities. He has maintained all A's since enrollment, excelling in advanced math, and even tackling high school level geometry. He's been honored as student of the quarter in science, STEM, and sports conditioning. Carson's academic achievement and leadership were recognized as he was inducted into the National Junior Honor Society last year. Since his induction, he applied for and was granted a section of Glover Road as part of the Adopt a Trail program, and he plans to transfer the road section to the Wilson National Junior Honor Society, who will maintain it as part of their community service contribution. And You asked me about helping you get a sign out there, right? Okay. Mr. Paul Kiesler, who just waved at us, he is the director over those activities, and he's going to assist us in getting that accomplished. Carson has generously given his time to the Tucson 5K park run, assisting with event setup and participant safety. He also has lent a helping hand as a student aide during school registration and has donated books to the school library. In addition to his academic and community involvement, Carson's passion lies in soccer. He dedicates 3 to 5 days a week to practice and games, and he aspires to play at a collegiate level, aiming for academic and athletic scholarships. And young man, I have no doubt that you will accomplish that goal. Last year, he earned a spot on an elite club soccer team that competed in the national finals in Dallas, Texas. It's clear, Carson, as a dedicated young man, you will accomplish all that you strive for. Just keep your eye on the goal. And it just pleases me, as a representative for this council of Oro Valley, to recognize you as our spotlight on youth. Congratulations.
Nice job, Carson. Glad to have you and your family here this evening, and good job getting that sign there for your school. Other council reports this evening? Councilmember Bowen?
Yes, thank you, everyone. Yesterday, I had the privilege of attending the ribbon cutting at Sangha Yoga in the marketplace, and amongst the other interesting things that I learned, that was the first time that that shell in the marketplace has ever been used. So as the town grows and more demand is created for services, this existing retail can be filled, and I appreciate the work of the staff to help get that business in there, but it's just great to fill these empty shells and to fill the spaces at the marketplace. So I think, you know, a shout out to that business. Hopefully people will note it. Maybe they'll stop by when they're in the marketplace. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Bourne. Councilmember Nicholson.
I just want to give a shout out to the 162nd Air National Guard. This weekend, they fulfilled one of my dreams. I got to actually fly in an F-16. I just want to thank Pelt, the wing commander, Gomer, the liaison, and Mongo, my pilot, went through a lot of G's. And we're in a dogfight, and we're in the aggressor, so I got to fly on an actual mission. And I did not pass out or throw up, unlike our previous mayor, but Ross, shall I say, for Tucson. But anyways, I had a great time, and I do appreciate them to give me that experience. Been interested in aviation ever since I could walk. I was a pilot since 2001, and I've been controller since 2007. It was really a dream come true, so I just want to thank everyone in the Guard Unit and everyone that serves in the country. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilmember Nicholson. Congratulations. I'd like to take a moment and recognize our town attorney. He was recently awarded the 40 Under 40 Award. This is a prestigious award that recognizes young professionals like our town attorney. His wife happened to receive this award last year, and I asked Mr. Rothschild if this was unique to them, and then we learned on the side that our assistant town manager, Chris Cornelison, who was a recipient last year, that his wife is also a recipient of the 40 Under 40, so we're seeing a trend here. But congratulations. Also, Councilmember Green and I had the opportunity to attend the annual Honoring Heroes Recognition Banquet. This is for law enforcement officers that help to remove impaired drivers off the road. And DUI officer Vanessa Molina was recognized at this event for her work in our community. She's been with OVPD for 4 years. In visiting with Vanessa, her shift is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I believe Monday evening from maybe 4 or 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. to 4 a.m. And if that's not enough, she also explained to me that then during the week she's often having to report to prosecutors, or so it's a significant effort that she makes. The bottom line is, you know, that the banquet is it's inspiring, but also sobering because of the tragedies that result from because of impaired drivers, but because of officers like Officer Molina, who helps keep these individuals off our roadways. She most definitely saves lives in our community. So we're very grateful for Officer Molina and thankful that she was recognized for her effort. So if we could give her an applaud. Her family is very proud of her. She's a Tucsonian. She went to Pueblo High School, and we're just really grateful to have her as part of our department. Any other reports this evening? Seeing none, we'll go to our town manager, Mr. Wilkins.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of announcements. Friday night concerts at Steam Pump Ranch have begun October 27th. The band is Steel Saguaros. Movies at the ranch also begin on October 21st, October Sky. You may notice we have more podcasts that are being produced by Nick up in our booth up there. Monthly events with our Parks and Recreation staff. But as well as this last month, we had a podcast with the owner of Stack's Book Club up in the Oro Valley Marketplace. So you can check those out on our website or through social media. We also have a QR code on the Vista newsletter if you wanted to access it through that. And I'd also like to welcome a few new businesses that opened. Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers on Oracle Road, Northwest Urgent Care and Northwest Primary Care on Oracle Road, Oro Valley Spa on La Cañada, and the Bailey Veterinarian Medical Clinic on North Oracle also. So welcome to our community.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkins. The agenda will remain as posted. I do have a blue card for call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. Mr. Tim Fagan, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Thank you.
My name is Tim Fagan. You probably know that by now. I'm a resident of Oro Valley, and I'm actually old enough to remember when Dwight D. Eisenhower added "under God" to the Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm guessing some of you can. Well, anyway, in 2001, my wife and I built our house on 3.3 acres at 9510 Calle Buena Vista. We were attracted by the peacefulness, by the incredible views, and by the zoning for farms and ranches. I had horses there for over 25 years. It's been a historic neighborhood since its founding. That heritage and the lifestyle that accompanies it must be maintained for future generations. The OVCN rezoning and building must not be allowed. The sports ministry, which I support, can be built elsewhere in Oro Valley. Thank you.
I have no other blue cards for call to the audience, so we'll close call to audience and go to consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to regular agenda. Mr. Standish, if you'd read item 3A, please.
Resolution number R23-38, declaring the proposed amendments to the Oro Valley Zoning Code, Chapter 23, Zoning Districts, Chapter 26, Provisions for Recreation Area, Chapter 31, Definitions, and other related sections in Attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
So I move to vote to declare the document a public record.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Standish, if you'd read item 3B.
Public hearing, ordinance number O23-04, proposed code amendments to the Oro Valley Zoning Code, Chapter 23, Zoning Districts, Chapter 26, Provisions for Recreation Area, Chapter 31, Definitions, and other related sections.
Thank you. Principal Planner Ms. Sims is with us this evening and will present this item. Ms. Sims.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. The purpose of this item is to consider proposed code amendments to private recreation areas. If approved, it will only affect private recreation areas in new residential subdivisions, multifamily developments, or mixed-use developments. It will not apply to public parks or any existing private parks unless they're proposing a change. So the proposed code amendments, they stem from a need that was identified in the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Master Plan. Specifically, as shown on the chart on the screen, it identified that there is a need for larger neighborhood parks. Now these are 2 acres or more, as well as ball courts, playgrounds, and ramadas, and these are in private recreation areas. This need was based on significant public input that was received at this time through a townwide survey and further prioritized by the strategic leadership plan through the objective to look at our codes and make recommendations to prioritize larger neighborhood area parks as well as more meaningful amenities. So our first step in this process was to research what the best practices were. And we looked at our own code. We also looked at that needs assessment as well as the master plan, but inventoried private recreation areas not only in Oro Valley, but in numerous jurisdictions around the state that are listed on the screen. We also conferred with the PROS consulting group, and they're who did the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. Now, this research and the key findings as well as key aspects of the code were presented, discussed with the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, Planning and Zoning Commission, as well as Town Council through study sessions. I do want to mention that all the questions and comments we received in these study sessions, as well as staff responses, were included in your packet. As part of the research, we also initially reached out to the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association, as well as the Metropolitan Pima Alliance at this time as well with those key findings and letting them know where the proposed code amendments were headed. Now, as part of this feedback we received, we also surveyed HOA board members who oversee private recreation areas to better understand the amenity use and needs and the value of smaller parks within our existing parks. Of the survey, we had 18 respondents representing 24 different private rec areas. This includes Rancho Vistosa, which does oversee most of those. So although this does provide insight, it shouldn't be solely used for the decision-making due to the low response rate. So looking at the guidance and objectives, we have 4 different areas we are looking to amend. And one, to prioritize larger neighborhood area parks, we're looking to consolidate private rec areas, increase or establish the rec area size, and prioritize higher value rec areas. And then for more meaningful amenities, it's making sure that there's a variety of amenities for all ages and abilities. So that first objective, to get a larger neighborhood area parks, is consolidating private rec areas, and this is to make sure they're adequately sized and a central focal point for gathering in residential developments. What we found in our research is right now in the code, there's no mechanism to make sure that private rec areas are consolidated, and this can result in small scattered parks. And what's shown on the screen is the Villages at Silverhawk subdivision, and the stars are notate the four private rec areas within that subdivision. So when we presented during the study sessions, there were agreement that these larger consolidated rec areas are better, but council did specify that there are circumstances where smaller scattered parks are needed. So right now in the proposed code, we are proposing that the rec areas cannot be divided more than two times. They must be within a half mile of the residents that it intends to serve, and must be at least 60 feet wide. However, per the council feedback we received last time, we did add some flexibility that there can be more than two rec areas if a special circumstance arises, such as topography, or to meet those distance requirements or provide more variety of amenities. And the Villages at Silverhawk is a good example of this, where the additional two private rec areas make sense because to meet the distance requirements in such a large subdivision. We also added flexibility that town council can approve narrower recreation areas due to topography. Under this consolidation, the proposed code also requires adjacent subdivisions to construct larger shared rec areas. An example of where this happened is the park off the Moore Road Loop between Valley Vista and Altera. There was concern from council about the mechanics and feasibility of requiring different developers and even possibly different HOAs to share a rec area. So in response to this, we have amended the code language to make sure that it only applies in a limited circumstance where a rezoning or a master planned development results in more than one subdivision. So the example on the screen is Capella, which is located on the northwest corner of La Cholla and Lambert. And this is an example of both a rezoning and a master planned area. And it has at least six different subdivisions, but they all are under one master HOA, and they which will regulate not only the open space, but the rec areas. So this is typical for these master planned areas. Rancho Vistoso is another example. And this likely it will happen in a limited occurrence with any future annexations. Our second objective is to make sure we're improving utility and use of rec areas by increasing the size of those. So Oro Valley, in most areas, we have high design standards and expectations. However, our rec requirement for subdivisions is lower than some of the surrounding jurisdictions, and this is shown in the chart. Also, in our multifamily and mixed-use zoning districts, there is an open space requirement, but it's not clear how much of that has to be amenitized rec area. So the proposed amount is similar to what developers are used to providing in this area, in the Northwest region. Specifically, it's closely aligned to Pima County. So what we are proposing is to increase the amount of rec from 512 square feet to 900 square feet for residential subdivisions. Now this number, although we use Pima County as a basis, it's really what we looked at the guidance of the 2 acre to get to 2 acre neighborhood parks. So right now with our current 512 square feet units per acre, it would require 170 lots to get to 2 acres, which with our limited land supply, we don't foresee that many larger subdivisions developing. As proposed at 900 square feet per unit, it gets us much closer by requiring a 98 lot subdivision, which is more likely what's going to develop with our limited land. Now, there was concern from council last time where the increase could be a violation of state law. So for context, applying stricter standards to a property with existing zoning rights could be considered a taking, which could lead to the town being sued. So to address this increase would only apply to rezonings. And this is compliant with state law because they are asking for new property rights. Now, with regard to multifamily and mixed-use developments, we also heard from council that it's critical that we make sure that the open space requirement remains. So the proposed code does not change the open space requirement. Rather, it ensures that a specific portion of that open space is amenitized rec area. Lastly, we did receive direction of looking to apply the recreation amount for apartments similar to how we apply it to a single-family subdivision, mostly to make sure it aligns with the density proposed. So the proposed code amendment does require 400 square feet per unit of rec space for apartments. We also look at attached townhomes or patio homes. They tend to be designed similar to a detached single-family residential subdivision, and the need is no different for those versus a regular subdivision. So we are proposing to apply the same standards to those as we do with our single-family. And then the last objective under ensuring that we have larger neighborhood park areas is to prioritize higher value rec areas. So right now in the code, instead of constructing the required rec space, applicant can request to use an in-lieu fee to satisfy this requirement. Now there is a criteria and it does require town council approval. However, it does not establish a minimum rec area size. Now these requests are rare. There have been about 3 in the past 20 years. But working with Pros Consulting and through our inventory, we found that extremely small private parks, those that are a quarter acre or less, have a low recreational value, and that's mainly because there's just not adequate space to provide all the amenities, especially basic amenities, that are appealing to residents. So the proposed code will eliminate these very small parks that are a quarter acre or less by requiring the in-lieu fee be paid instead of putting in the park. Now, there was concern that this will result in less rec areas and more in-lieu fees, but even this will be very rare. It equates to having a 21-lot subdivision or a 12-lot rezoning. This has only happened once in the last 5 years, the Morning Vista townhome development, you may recall. And right now, only 5% of our existing private parks would have qualified for this. And then lastly, the proposed code does maintain that option to request an in-lieu fee, and it also maintains that those requests still come to town council, and they must meet a criteria to make sure that there is a public facility nearby. We did, however, further restrict it that the request for in-lieu fee cannot be used for the entire rec requirement. They still have to provide at least a quarter acre on site. And this is to ensure that those bigger subdivisions at least have some recreation space. And then lastly, there was concern about the use of in-lieu fees. It was suggested that the fees be used on private parks because they may be closest to the property. However, we conferred with our legal department, and the town does not have authority to require another private park to allow residents that aren't within their subdivision. But the code language has been updated to hopefully meet this intent by making sure that the in-lieu fees collected are used on the public facility that's closest to the property. And lastly, we want to make sure we're having high-quality amenities in these private rec areas to meet all ages and abilities. Right now, there's no specific provisions in the code to ensure there's meaningful amenities. And what we found with the survey is that seating, shading, and pedestrian connectivity were directly correlated with a park's use. So we are now proposing to require that specific amenities are in all private rec areas, just as a standard. And those are the ones I just stated, but also having trash receptacles and pet waste stations, as well as vehicle and bicycle parking. We also updated the list of passive and active amenities, but from council, we did understand that our list may not always be comprehensive, or as things modernize and new rec opportunities come online, there might be other opportunities. So we did amend the code language to make sure that there's an allowance for town council to approve an amenity that's not listed in the code, but also to replace amenities that are proposed to achieve a better variety or better fit for future residents. With the number of amenities, we didn't change the amount of passive or active required, but they now will be applied to multifamily and mixed-use developments. And then also another change is with the playground shading. So we did hear concerns that our playgrounds are not always shaded enough. So the existing code only requires a portion of play equipment to be shaded, and it depends on the size of the apparatus. What we are proposing is to require 100% of not just the play area, but also the safety zone around the play area to be shaded. So what's shown on the screen on the top graphic, the play structure is in black and white, and the safety zone is the brown around it. Now, we do understand there are some instances where this isn't always going to make sense, and specifically looking at structures that have to be detached from the main structure and need more space because of their height, so swing sets, for instance. So the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended a condition of approval to revise the language to ensure that the intent of the original code language was met, but also allow standalone structures that are secondary in nature and need that larger safety zone to not require the shading. So an example of this in real life is on the bottom picture. You can see the main playground equipment is completely shaded as well as the safety zone, but what's circled in the orange is the accompanying swing set. And this language has been added to the code that you review tonight. Then the code amendment also extends the limit of natural turf, which is 15%, to all private rec areas, regardless of how many neighborhoods they are serving. Now, there is a provision that town council can extend the 15% if an amenity such as a sports field or something like that is being proposed. And there are specific water conservation measures already incorporating code, specifically like the type of grass you can plant. And then lastly, the code does, or the proposed language does codify some existing trail requirements specifically to the design, location, maintenance, and signage for trails. The proposed code amendment was reviewed for compliance to the general plan, and it does meet all applicable guiding principles, goals, and policies by providing more park and rec opportunities that are accessible and well-connected with amenities for all ages and abilities. In addition to the study sessions and the survey, the more final draft of the code amendment was presented to industry stakeholders and back to the Parks and Rec Advisory Board back in August. Staff had several meetings with the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association to discuss their concerns. And from these discussions, some clarifications were made in the proposed amendment. And a letter from SABA that was sent to the Planning and Zoning Commission, as well as staff responses, was also included in your packet. And all four groups did have concerns about the increased shading requirement. So the Planning and Zoning Commission's condition addresses the shading concerns by accounting for the nuance of a swing set or a structure similar to that. So in summary, the proposed code amendment aims to meet the need that was identified in the Parks and Rec master plan, as well as prioritized by the strategic leadership plan. It incorporates some of the feedback we received from the study sessions, as well as a survey and through stakeholder meetings. And it does meets the general plan, guiding principles, goals, and policies. Therefore, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend conditional approval, and it's subject to revising the language for that playground structure, which since then has been addressed in the language you received in the ordinance. Now, staff, for tonight's discussion, staff is recommending a condition to address a recent inquiry regarding the use of drainage basins for recreation. First, this section of code is a carryover, and the applicants can currently make this request. It is also common practice, not only in Oro Valley, but in surrounding region, to have rec spaces in the drainage basins. However, it does require scrutiny, which is why the current code and proposed code language requires a recommendation by both the town engineer and the planning and zoning administrator. But ultimately, it is town council who will approve these requests. And the condition is to remove the language that's shown on the screen because it is superfluous since these plans all go to council as already. And so with that, that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Before we go to questions, I'm going to open the public hearing for this agenda item at this time, so the public hearing is open. This is your opportunity to speak to this particular agenda item. To do that, you'd fill out a blue card and give that to Ms. Stein. And so we have Cheryl Lamona. And if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley.
Good evening. My name is Cheryl Lamona, and I am a resident of Oro Valley for the last 17 and a half years. So I live in Rancho Vistoso. And there's been a lot of work that has gone in this plan. But nevertheless, I've spent a huge portion of the last 2 days going through this ordinance, and I still have a number of questions. I did watch the last study session that you had on it, and I also went through all the documentation, including the questions and answers that staff put together. They did a good job on doing that. But I still have questions. I'm still confused on certain areas. I really think it would have been helpful if the information that was provided would have not just limited to the changes with the strike-throughs and the capital letters to designate. I wish we would have been able to see the whole chapter that this was involved in so that you could really get the context of some of this. But I'm going to, mostly my questions are falling on page 9. So I'm going to run through that, page 9 of the ordinance. And the first one relates to the rezoning or master development plan resulting in more than one residential subdivision. And my question on that related back to the 885 annexation that we had looked at before. I know it's in your strategic plan. It's something that is not going to go away. And so my question on that one was, that was set up that the state was going to auction off individual parcels within that for development of housing, whether it be single-family homes or apartment complexes or townhomes. Now, I'm not quite sure how this would work with a situation like that where the developers would be coming in at different time intervals to start their construction, and maybe one of them would end up folding before they ever got to the development. What kind of plan would that have been if they had already agreed the first owner with someone else that they were going to build this park? So I think that one's a little bit complicated. Next one is on the single family dwelling units. I know Saba was concerned about the fact that it was increasing. I think part of that problem has come about because we've decreased the amount of the lots. We're building on 6,000, 7,000 square foot lots. They have tiny backyards, no place for children, and we would love to have more families come into Oro Valley with kids. So there's no place for them to play, and that's why we need larger recreation areas for them. Next one is the one regarding apartments, where a tot lot is only going to be required if there's, or it's not going to be required if it's age restricted. Well, we know that apartment buildings change hands frequently. And when that happens, I'd like to know, are apartment buildings deed restricted for something like that? Because otherwise, you know, I could own one, I could die, and in 10 years it would be sold to somebody else, and whether it's does, and now it doesn't have a tot lot or anything for the child. So I'm out of time, and I'm sorry because I had more questions, but thank you.
David Godaleski. My apologies, David.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. David Godleski, Southern Arizona Home Builders Association. I am a resident of the town of Oro Valley. I live across the street in Copper Creek. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment to you this evening on this proposed ordinance. I do want to acknowledge staff's efforts, especially in the outreach and working with organizations like ours. We're grateful for that relationship and the opportunity to try and develop sound public policy that's in the best interest of the community, as well as the private sector. We do recognize and understand that council's desire to increase the recreation area requirements. SABA has been supportive of various ballot measures related to increasing town park amenities. And we submitted a letter yesterday evening to you that we feel outlines a few recommendations that would certainly advance the town's goals in terms of increasing the amenities, increasing the size requirements, but we think help address some of the issues that our members have expressed to us, as well as potential issues related to future housing costs and impact for the types of families and homeowners that the town wants to attract. I'm happy to answer any of the any specific questions related to our letter or our requests. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. I have no other blue cards. Mr. Rothschild, before I close the public hearing, Ms. Lamona mentioned that she had some additional questions. Mr. Godleski, if we had questions to him, after I've closed the public hearing, can, or? Yeah. Okay. Mr. or Ms. Lamona, would you like to, sounds like you went through some exhaustive work there, and I think the council would benefit from your hearing what your additional questions are.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, so one of the other ones was regarding that this would only apply to new rezonings and new developments. So I understand that that came about from Prop 207, which I believe was implemented in 2006. And that was mainly relative to eminent domain, but they did throw in a section that said it had, you could not have diminution on property values. You couldn't do certain zoning things and whatever. I'm just kind of wondering, that has been so long ago. When staff did their research, did they look to see whether there were any lawsuits that came about? Because it seems to me like recreational facilities is not a huge change. Yes, we are changing the square footage, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it would diminish the value that much. I don't know that. It's just a question that I have. Let's see what else is here. And one other thing was, unless there is a typo on the chart that was put together, attachment 3, with all of the questions, there's a statement on here where people were asking, well, actually on council, data on the usage of mini parks and attractive amenities and is it, you know, whatever. So the answer on there says that 71% of the respondents said mini parks were used often to very often. Now, maybe we left out a not, but I do think, again, it comes back to the fact that kids don't have yards to play in. So if you live, you know, close to one of the little mini parks, and if it only has a swing set, that means the world to a child to take them over there and just let them play for 10, 15 minutes on that park, and then you can walk back home. So I do see some values in that. I understand what you were trying to accomplish in having larger amenities, and I agree with that as well. But I just don't think that it's a good idea to just say, well, if you only have a quarter of an acre to use, you should just have to pay an in-lieu fee. So thank you very much for the extra time.
Thank you. And Mr. Godleski, if you would come back to the podium, council may have questions for you, and I don't want them to lose that opportunity once I've closed the public hearing, because I did notice in a planning and zoning meeting that a representative from SAVA couldn't speak after the public hearing was closed. So why don't you just come back to the podium? I'll open it to council. If you have specific questions for Mr. Godlewski, this would be the time to ask those questions. One question I had in regards to it's bullet item. It has to do with credits, and so maybe staff, Ms. Sims, Mr. Godlewski is saying we, and SABA, I just know this is specific to you, but we request clarification on how credits for enhanced amenities will be determined and modify the language to indicate the council may approve the use of amenities not found in Table 26.2, but not prescribe specific amenities in a specific subdivision. Can you speak to that as far as, or and Mr. Godlewski, maybe you can also speak to what clarification you're looking for?
Mr. Mayor, thank you. With respect to that particular point, we felt that the proposed language was clear in the sense that when it came to enhanced amenities, that there was an exercise required by the applicant to demonstrate. I know cost was a component to that. I believe the size that the amenity would take up under kind of the base code requirement. And then if they wanted to propose an enhanced amenity that may result in a smaller park feature, that there was going to be an analysis done by staff. And from our perspective, we weren't sure whether there was going to be like a corresponding, you had to exceed what was required by X percentage, X dollar amount, whether that was going to correlate with a specific acreage reduction. So just, again, clarification of exactly how that would work. And then that the second part of that, there was language, I believe it's in page 13, D2F, and it was unclear to us on whether there was broad authority that was going to be given to the council to allow them to dictate the specific park amenities, or whether it was the intent was simply to allow the council to be able to add or modify the table that was above. I think certainly from our perspective, we'd prefer those amenities, specific amenities, to be administratively approved and something that's determined between the applicant and the staff. Any time that things come before the council, it presents a level of uncertainty, both in terms of what the outcome may be, but what the cost components of what the new requirements could become. Thank you.
If you could just stand by. So, yeah.
Mr. Mayor, Council, so with regard to how we apply the credit for enhanced amenities, we're just looking for the value of the rec space, and the enhanced amenities just has to match the value of what would have been required. So we look at the land value of the space that would have required, what amenities they would have put in, whatever cost that is, it has to at least match the value of a reduced rec area, but with higher quality amenities. The section about council's approval of comparable amenities, so that is something that they can bring. But I will say right now, the recreation area plans, we haven't changed the process. They currently come to council, so it's not an administrative process. So currently those recreation amenities are considered by council now, so we're just maintaining that. But clarifying that amenities not in code can be approved.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Sims. Any additional questions for Mr. Godlewski, Vice Mayor?
Mr. Godlewski, so are you looking for some type of a minimum where we say, I guess I can kind of see your point where if the marginal difference is small in the type of amenity being offered, you could potentially add up the smallest price amenities that would meet the code. Then you could go slightly higher and then say we want this much credit against our land. How would that calculation be performed? Is that, am I kind of understanding what your question is on that, or can you help me clarify what you're looking for there?
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, I'm not sure we've gotten that in depth in terms of how those specific scenarios may play out. I think it was just to look for additional specificity, so it wasn't, you know, you had to exceed the enhanced amenity, didn't have to be 100% of what was, you know, what the base amenity was going to be there for to get the credit. So it was just, again, just looking for a little more context about how that decision was going to be made. And frankly, it may not be something that could actually be integrated into the code itself, but it's just always helpful for that builder developer to kind of have at least an understanding of how that's going to work and what the trade-off factors might be when they're working on putting those plans together.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Sims, if I could follow up and ask, this is something new to the code. We've had in lieu fees before, but we have allowed credit for enhanced amenities in the past, right? So that's correct. Not something new now that I'm thinking of reading the code in preparation for this. Okay, so how do we currently calculate that?
So currently, you take the land value of the required rec area and all the and the cost of all the amenities. So if it's two passive, two active, and you get a total cost. And then they'll propose, hey, we're going to shrink it, maybe a quarter acre. And by shrinking it, the cost of the land is going to go down. But we're going to make up that cost by now we're going to do a swimming pool in a single family subdivision or a skate park or a splash pad. And that cost makes up for that reduction in land. And so it's okay. Like for like. There's not a percentage of exceeding it.
Okay. So this is something that you're already doing. You're already comfortable with working with developers and making these calculations. It would just be done according to the new requirement instead of the current requirement. But it's not a new thing for you to do. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Does that answer your question a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So maybe before we close the public hearing, given that Ms. Lamona had these questions, in case there needs to be clarification, I don't know if you captured her questions, Ms. Sims, but first was with the example of the 885 annexation, that scenario. What I understood is the different developers, how would this apply? Could you speak to that?
Sure. So with the state land, they did have a conceptual plan, and it did have shared rec areas. And similar with Capella, that will have six different developers. But because those shared areas are done early in the process, everyone's aware of it. And also, it's a phase. So I know there was concern of, well, what if three developers come in, build, and it never gets finished? The shared rec areas are generally tied to the subdivision. So if you're the developer that goes in, and this was the Alterra and Valley Vista, Alterra was required to build half, and when Valley Vista went in, they had to finish it off. So that's not new either, the phasing and the construction times and having multiple developers work on it, because there is a plan that they're all working towards, and it's known early on. The SFR question, or I don't know, it was a comment.
I don't think it was a question, yeah, right? Okay, so I would go to the no-tot lot, if age-restricted.
Sure. So if there's substantial changes from like a senior care facility to turn it into an apartment, we do have the ability to make them come up to all code requirements to serve the needs of the future residents. So that you know, would be a case-by-case basis to see what the substantial changes were. But likely there also are parking challenges and other code requirements that they're going to have to find a way to meet to change those over to a all ages facility.
Almost seems like it'd be treated like a rezoning.
Yeah, almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't a typo in the attachment. I will say that, yes, a lot of the respondents did say that their smaller parks were used a few times a week or a few times a week. The main reason of why those were used was based on the location and accessibility and if they had amenities. And for smaller parks, although we put in the survey a quarter acre or more, I'm not sure if that relayed to everybody of what that really means. It's subjective when you say small parks in a survey.
She also mentioned about new rezonings, Prop 207. Did staff do any research to look at lawsuits, is what I captured from that?
So no, we did not look at if there were any lawsuits. However, with the diminution of value, With the increase, it will reduce the amount of lots that can be done. So I do think there could be a case be made that there, the increase automatically applying it to all existing property rights could lower the value. So.
Okay.
Is that?
I believe so.
I think most of them.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sims. Thank you, Mr. Godlewski. Thank you, Ms. Lamona. So I'm going to close the public hearing, and at this point, I'd entertain a motion. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, just to get a motion out on the floor, I move to approve Ordinance 023-04, proposed code amendments to Chapter 23, Chapter 26, Chapter 31, and other related sections of the Zoning Code, except that Table 26-1, Recreation Area Standards under Apartments, shall add the language, quote, or 35% total open space, whichever is greater, and to strike the words, decisions may be appealed to the Town Council from Section 26.5.C.1.E.4, based on the finding that this is in conformance with the General Plan and Strategic Leadership Plan.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Bowen. So we'll open it to discussion. Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, I have several questions on the code itself. So first, Section 26.5, it's not clear what subsection other than Section 1 on page 6. It says the minimum amount of recreation area and private outdoor space are established in Tables 26-1 and subject to the following. Item C, it says, a rezoning or master development plan that results in more than one residential subdivision shall provide shared recreational areas. The question we've touched on a little bit now is, it is a very complex issue. In reality, in many cases, a developer will come in and create many different subdivision or areas that'll then be sold off to individual builders. In some cases, there's no designs or anything yet on that. Don't know, you know, other than the general zoning. So it seems to be awkward at best to try to dictate what the park and rec spaces will be when you're not aware of the type of housing. It could be a 10,000 square foot lot. It could be a 5,000 square foot lot. It could be a high density, it could be a lower density, depending on what the current market conditions are and what the builder wants. Classic example, Rancho Vistoso, master plan community, anticipated a much higher density rate in residential than was actually built. And in that case, in almost every single case, other than a few master planned large recreation areas, every subdivision that was sold and purchased did a preliminary plat with this particular type of housing and the particular type of open space and recreation areas within that. This would have been undoable in this situation under this ordinance. And once again, not just undoable, very awkward, and we don't know what we would have ended up with. So I really do see some major issues on that area.
Ms. Sims, can you speak to Councilmember Solomon's concerns, question?
Sure. So, Councilmember Solomon, Mr. Mayor. So, when I said they were planned out, the areas are planned. You're right. Sometimes the amenities do come later once they know who's building and who's developing. And in Rancho Vistoso, they did have larger community parks pre-planned, but the one that's like on the Moore Loop Road was part of a subsequent rezoning. So, you know, those amenities were then planned out once they knew what types of home. I will also say that maybe to help provide some surety of what will be built is during those master planned areas and the rezonings, there is an idea of the home types that are going to go on there because based on the lot sizes and the unit count. So we do have an idea of if it's going to be townhomes, patio homes, or single family detached homes going in those.
Correct, but the final product's not determined until the property's been sold and the developers put in an application throughout the town. So once again, I think we're really putting the horse before the cart and that this may not be a good provision. Okay, the next item right below that, D, linear parks, as defined by this code, are acceptable as a portion of recreation areas when they serve to improve access to amenities and open space networks. Does that mean that linear parks have no values on their own? The only time this seems to imply we're saying they're acceptable when they serve to improve access to amenities and open space networks, period. So our code is saying linear parks have no value and shouldn't be considered an amenity. Okay, I'm just going to go through these. I see a lot of these items that I think this council that need to be reconsidered and looked into before this is approved. Next is that housing
type. Councilmember Solomon, can you just respond, Ms. Sims, to that concern?
Sure. So the linear parks, they can satisfy a portion, and usually they're connecting the rec areas. I don't know if Mr. Vela has more experience with linear parks on their own.
The question is, does this council basically want to eliminate linear parks except for special circumstances? That's something for the council to think about, I think, before they approve this ordinance.
Does it satisfy a portion?
Got it. So the idea is that the ask is that more substantive, larger recreation areas be created. There isn't a complete discount. There is a discount on linear parks, but they still get partial credit for it, the way the code's written. So, again, the aim is to get larger contiguous areas where you can provide more amenities, where you can fit that tot lot, where you can fit that swing set. And linear parks, and a version of linear park is allowed, but they're also, there's a point where if they get so skinny, they're discounted and not given credit.
No, I understand. But so, later in the code, it says it is a minimum of 60 feet.
Correct.
So correct. We don't have to worry about someone trying to do a 10-foot linear park because, all right, so.
May I clarify? The linear park, it's 25 feet wide. The 60 feet applies to the rec areas, and there is, within the code, the council can allow narrower rec areas specifically if a linear park is being done. But the linear park itself is only 25 feet.
Okay. On that table 26-1, my first question is, okay, on the single-family units, a point brought up by Saba, which is good, is that we're saying 512 square feet per unit, but we're not distinguishing whether we've got an extremely dense single-family resident subdivision of 6,000 square foot, or one's getting up to or more than a quarter acre up to almost an acre, or 136. Those are a completely different animal. They provide an enormous amount of space on their lots for recreation areas. So I really do think we need to look at distinguishing between lots that are 10,000 square foot or larger. My next question is, what is the rationale, other than we think we can get away with it under state law, for requiring 512 square feet recreation area for current zoned areas, but now wanting to nearly double it to 900 square foot for rezoning? So what makes the recreation space, why are we wanting to double it if somebody rezones a property?
So Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, again, we use Pima County as a basis. They're very similar at 870. But also is to get us closer to the 2-acre neighborhood parks, which was the guidance from the Parks and Rec Master Plan.
Well, that's fine. And if the town wants to do it and pay for it, they can. But remember, all of these are going to be funded by the individual owners, and they're going to have to be paying monthly into their HOAs to maintain these areas. And by the way, Pima County is a whole different demographic and geographical distribution than Oro Valley. It's very spread out. If you live in Pima County, unincorporated Pima County, the nearest park may be 10 miles away from you, 5 miles away from you. Oro Valley is a more concentrated, dense community. Comparing it to Pima County, I don't believe is fair in this instance. You are always close to a park when you live in Oro Valley. So the use of justification that we need to be more like, in fact, exceed Pima County, I don't think is legitimate. I think, once again, we need to look at the impact on this. Remember, when you require that amount of recreation space, that reduces the number of lots that can be put in a subdivision. That raises the price of the house. It also raises the homeowner's monthly association fee. So the question now is, has anyone looked at the economic impact on that? A lot of people, it makes a difference if the house is $1,000 more because of the increase in recreation requirements. And if their HOA fee, everyone complains about the monthly HOA fee. If it goes up $20, $25 a month because of maintaining all these new recreational space requirements, that's highly significant.
If it may, Mayor, Member Solomon, there certainly is an economic impact, and we didn't calculate the exact amount. But I do want to unpack a few things there. So a question of, why is it okay to double on a rezoning but not for an area that's already got its zoning? PROS Consulting, which is really the basis for raising the number. The basis for the number wasn't looking at other jurisdictions and looking at, hey, Pima County has a high number, we're going to use that number. That's not what we did. The start with PROS Consulting was recommending, as a benchmark, seeking 2-acre opportunities for parks. Ask ourselves, what are we likely to see in the future in terms of Oro Valley-sized subdivisions? And how do you get there, and what is that number? So we first came up with a number that way. And then we looked to the region to make sure that that number that we just came up has some context, has at least some parity of what out of fairness that developers are seeing in the region. And respectfully, Mr. Solomon, when it comes to comparing the need for larger in the county versus larger in more dense areas, I think the opposite argument is just as valid, that in more dense areas, you need larger parks, more opportunities, because it is the average lot size in Oro Valley globally for the entire community is in that 7,000, 8,000 range. Overall, when you take every lot together and you average it. So I think the opposite position is from our estimation, is more valid, respectfully. In more dense areas, there's more warrant for larger recreation areas.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon, it looks like you have additional questions.
Back. Yeah. Yes.
So you've hit your 10-minute threshold. I just want to give other council members an opportunity. So, Councilmember Nicholson, I'm going to check in with you. Do you have questions?
Go first.
Okay. Councilmember Bowen? Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Okay, Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Ms. Sims, I wanted to understand, you said that the in-lieu fees, help me understand what they can and cannot be used for.
Sure. So Mayor Ranfield, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, in-lieu fees can be used for improvements or new amenities at public facilities. They cannot be used for those items at any private rec facility.
The town has discretion.
Yes, and the town does have discretion on how they're used. So, yep.
Okay. Are we collecting those fees at this point in time for?
So it's a rare occurrence.
It's rare.
There's been about 3 in the last 20 years. One I'm familiar with is the River's Edge subdivision. It hasn't been built yet, but they did it in lieu fee because they're within walking distance to Riverfront Park.
Okay, and we use those fees for what? Can you remember?
I'm not sure what those fees were actually used on.
Okay, but there are some things that they can be used for, but then
any improvements or to a public facility.
As long as it's a public facility.
Yes. Gotcha. Public rec facility.
Thank you.
Was that it, Councilmember Jones-Ivy? Okay, Vice Mayor.
Thank you. Regarding the difference between a rezoning and a current property is when we're going through a rezoning, the developer, if they receive the rezoning, they're getting new property rights. So they're actually making a substantial amount of money by getting the rezoning through and getting new property rights so that, they can develop something differently. So I think that's where, we have the ability to require on a rezoning where there's new property rights being given. It's not even about the money, but just that there's new property rights being given. And regarding the cost of maintaining in the HOA, in your survey of HOAs, what was it that the HOAs found was the most expensive part of maintaining open spaces and recreation areas? Was it amenities or was it vegetation?
Council member, Vice Mayor Bear, I apologize. The main cost was landscape and irrigation.
Okay, so currently the challenge to most HOAs is landscape and irrigation versus a ramada or a picnic
correct
bench or a tot lot or et cetera. Okay, thank you.
Is it possible to bring up the ordinance that has the language about the linear park that Councilmember Solomon referenced? Possible to bring that up on the... Yes. Okay,
this is an attachment, I do have it available. Okay. I was unsure which attachment you are referring to, Mayor.
It is the ordinance and page...
page 6?
Yep, page 6. And then on page 13, it specifies that the linear park is only 25 feet wide and the amenities that are required for a linear park.
Okay. And this isn't necessarily... So at the beginning of your presentation, you listed a number of communities that you looked at. In terms of comparison, you listed those that are Marana, Sarita, Tucson. Just curious, what was the comparison with some of those other communities in terms of the 900 square feet?
Sure.
And while you're... I'll just say that the guideline, while yes, Oral Valley has a number of parks, the intent isn't to drive to a park. It's the ability to walk to a park, and so a park that's within a half mile or a 10-minute walk. I mean that's really the threshold. That's the guideline. That's what we're trying to achieve. So it's not driving, it's being able to walk within a reasonable distance to access a park. The other, in terms of that 2 acre, I mean, that came out of the master planning process, the assessment process that indicated that was, that we lacked in Oral Valley. And so this is an effort to try to address that, yeah.
Yeah, so Mayor Winfield, the Parks and Rec Master Plan, that two-acre neighborhood park was specific to HOA private parks, not just overall town parks.
Right.
To okay. Your points.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And with regard to your first question about how much Marana and Sarita and other surrounding ones, so Marana is similar to what we require now. There's a range between 200 and 500.
Right. I, it's clear to me what, but there was a whole list of other communities. How did you?
Sure. So a lot of communities also require rec based on a percentage of gross land area. So we singled out the ones that are more apples to apples to what we do.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And so is this where the language is for the linear park?
No. I think it's
page 6. This is page 6, but this is...
It's page 9, please. There you go. It's the number, or letter D.
D? Mm-hmm. And so what's changed from the current ordinance and this one?
So the changes that we made from the current language is right now linear parks can be used to satisfy the rec requirements. We changed it to they can satisfy a portion, but we also clarified what a linear park is, that it is narrower at only 25 feet, and it only requires seating, landscaping, drinking fountains, trash and pet waste stations, and a path. So you don't have those ball courts, you know, tot lots or anything of that nature in these areas, which is why we clarified that it can only be a portion.
And this is, this isn't, so Councilmember Solomon had said that by approving this, that somehow we're going to say that we do not want to have linear parks in our town. I don't believe that's what we're, it's certainly not the intent of.
Yeah, linear parks can definitely still be proposed.
Thank you. Other questions? Councilmember Solomon?
Thank you for giving me some more time, Mr. Mayor. Going back to table 26-1, it says a tot lot is required for apartment complexes that have 20 or more 2-plus bedroom units unless the complex is age restricted. Have we done a survey to find out? This seems to imply that if you have 2 bedrooms, you're going to have a large amount of tots. My understanding is the recent trend has been local residents downsizing, selling their homes, and renting 2-bedroom apartments. These are empty nesters. So what information do we have that says 2-bedroom apartments have a lot of toddlers?
Sure. So Mayor Renfield, Councilmember Solomon, this is actually an improvement to the current code because currently a tot lot is required for an apartment if they have 20 or more units. Hard stop.
Correct.
So we're expanding that to say that if they at least have to have 20 or more units that are 2-bedroom. We did not do research on how many children are in 2-bedroom apartments, but the family size is bigger or the amount of occupants are more.
Thanks. What I'm getting here is government overreach trying to dictate minute details of the entire community as opposed to specific case-to-case basis. I'm assuming toddler or tot lots are 1 to 2.5 years old. Do you know the current census states that the population from 0 to 5 years old is 3.3% of the Oro Valley population? Tots, believe me, I love tots. I wish I'd get my own toddler if my daughter and her husband would get around to having kids, okay? But you're looking at 1.5% of the population, and we have no evidence that says these apartments need tot lots. Has anyone done a look to see if these lots are ever utilized or not, or how much? So once again, this is just a concern I have, is I think we're setting in concrete requirements that may not serve our community. This goes right back down, my next question is right underneath that. See, in lieu of construction fees, we are now requiring 1/4 acre or less must provide a in-lieu fee. Yet, the response from the HOAs specifically says just the opposite. They say, under Section 3 of the survey, use of small private parks, 1/4 acre or less, were found small private parks are used often, uses dependent on location, accessibility, and type of amenities provided. Our own survey respondent says these are the most highly used, or these are highly used parks. Why don't we say may?
Why are we now eliminating something that our own survey says are highly used? Once again, we're going against what the reality is out there. So I have a real issue with that.
Ms. Sims, can you? Ms. Sims, an opportunity.
Councilmember Solomon, yes, the survey did show that those who responded, seven people responded to that question, and six did say they were being used. But I do want to also remind town council that that survey was only completed by 18 boards, and there's over 40 that have private rec areas. So it definitely gives insight, but may not be the best tool for decision making. And when we talk to Prost Consulting, who has done substantial work in this area, they were the ones that had made justification that a quarter acre or less, you're getting too small to have all the amenities. Not that they can't, but it just starts to get too small that they will.
Well, but remember, a quarter acre because you have fewer lots, okay? So you're not going to try to cram tons of amenities in there. My concern is, once again, we're not looking at the real uses and needs of the community in this. There's a lot of contradictions going on here. The quarter acre is one specific one. We have this magical two-acre park in our mind. Where's the surveys of all the two-acre parks and how heavily utilized they are? And then we come back and say, well, we only got 17 out of 40 responses. Okay. So, yes, statistics can be used one way or the other. That's why, look, I think this is a great initial start on an ordinance. I think there's a lot of serious concerns about it expressed by stakeholders. I don't think we gave any consideration to the economics of it. In the survey to the HOAs, when we asked them about what type of amenities they would like, did we ask, would you have been willing to have paid $1,000 more for your home and $25 a month in your HOA fee to have those or to have more space? You know, when you ask questions, people always say, yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, I'd love that. I love that. And then you say, well, now how would you like to pay for that? Oh, no, I don't want to pay for it. I mean, that's been typical from the beginning of time. So I have a lot of concerns in here. I have a lot of other specific issues or concerns. For example, in a section we say that when we do a trail, which is really good and useful, that the minimum width of the easement is 25 feet. May I ask you, what's the width of a typical residential street?
I think it's Mr. Kiesler. 50 foot, thank you.
No, a regular residential one-way pavement street, it's about 24 foot.
Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, so the actual pavement is 28 feet generally for a subdivision street, right, but the right-of-way is 50 feet.
Yes, okay. Now, on a trail, you're typically looking at about a 5 foot or so wide trail. My question is, why are we requiring a 25 foot easement for a 5 foot trail that's supposed to not disturb any of the significant vegetation?
So, Councilmember Solomon, the 25 feet is based off the Pima County Regional Trail System design standards. And that is what we enforce now for all of our public trails as well, even if they're in subdivisions. And it does have the area for the DG path or the earthen path, but also areas along the side for landscaping and ongoing maintenance.
Okay, thank you. Another question. I know, once again, you're going to say this comes right out of Pima County, but we have that if there's trails, trail signs shall be posted at 150 feet or in some cases 100 foot. Every foot we're going to have a trail sign. I believe from this front wall to the rear wall is probably about 100 feet. If somebody has a tape measure? No. My point is, If you look at the distance of 100 feet, particularly outside, it seems awful excessive that you're going to, like, you're going to walk, you're going to see sign. So once again, I just think we need to take a little deeper look at a lot of these major issues and some of these smaller issues. So with that, as I said, I've got a lot more questions. This is why I will not support approval of this ordinance at this time. I do appreciate all the time and effort from all the people involved, but I do think there's areas that we need to work on.
Okay. Any additional questions? Councilmember Nicholson.
Hi, Melanie. I had a couple questions. We were talking about the total costs, about the land, like they're doing small spots all over the place and reducing it down to spend a little bit more money in one area. What's the formula for that?
May I ask you to clarify the question? I'm not sure I'm understanding.
Yeah, maybe some of the council members, maybe I can phone a friend, but I thought the idea was like there, you get a lot of small little parks and like mm-hmm. there's a swing or there's a bench, but now you're bringing them all together. So you look at the land that you would have put it in all these little places and put it in one big area. Okay. So you're trying to increase the quality of what's in the one area. What kind of formula, or how do you guys look at that or judge that? Is there a formula? Or?
Sure. So Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Nicholson. So the land amount remains the same. So it would be either the 512 or the 900 square feet per unit. We're just saying instead of distributing it in five different areas, distribute it in two.
Okay, that perfect. Answered? Oh, perfectly okay. Answered it. Thank you. And the other part, the in-lieu fee, how is that determined, the size of it? Can you explain that just a little bit more?
Yeah, so Councilmember Nicholson, the in-lieu fee is determined by what the cost would have been to install the park to code requirements. So they have to take in the land value of what park size they would have been required to put in, what amenities requirements they would have to put in, as well as any improvements. And that's an appraised value that they submit to the town and interviewed, and that's what the in-lieu fee essentially equates to.
Okay, and that's appraised value of not the raw land, but as it's after it's developed, how much the
yes.
value would be? Okay.
Yeah.
And for the last part, I know you did a lot of work, 25 pages, you saw all the meetings, all that type of stuff. I'll say for me personally, it was a little hard to like follow everything, all the line throughs and trying to put everything together of what actually are the changes. Like, I think it would have helped me to have a few examples like, look, this is a small development. This is a big development. This is what it looked like here. But, you know, okay. Almost like a picture book for a little kid for me to understand a little better. But I know you did a great job. It was a great presentation. But I think that would have helped me just to try and piece things together because it was very hard, at least for me, difficult to like figure out what these changes are to go back and reread and like try and picture in my head how it looked. But anyways, great job. Otherwise, I appreciate it.
I'm a visual person too, so I can appreciate it.
Okay. Vice Mayor, would you repeat your motion? And then just as a reminder, that was seconded by Councilmember Bowen.
Do you want me to? Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to approve Ordinance 023-04, Proposed Code Amendments to Chapter 23, Chapter 26, Chapter 31, and other related sections of the Zoning Code, except that Table 26-1, Recreation Area Standards under Apartments, shall add the language, quote, or 35% total open space, whichever is greater, end quote, and to strike the words, decisions may be appealed to the Town Council from Section 26.5.C, point 1, point E, point 4, based on the finding that this is in conformance with the general plan and strategic leadership plan.
Thank you.
If we may, sorry,
okay.
May I ask a clarifying yes. question about the first condition? So just to clarify, the 35% now, or the open space percentage now is applicable within the zoning districts. And it still is applicable to even if you do single family in an R6. And also in the table, that would, it's kind of apples to oranges, if you will. So I'm just getting some clarification on the intent of the condition.
So regardless, you have to do the open space of that 35%. Within that area of that 35%, then that's where the rec area goes. My concern is by adding or, you're potentially eliminating the rec area and just doing open space without rec. So that might be the
Can you show me where the 35% requirement is maintained?
Yeah. So, okay, thank you. I don't know, Mr. Going, if we can bring up the code again. But if you would go to page 6. So it's under 3. The first sentence says that shall provide a minimum of 35%. And within that proportion, B is where you would do either the 512, the 900, or the 400 of rec space.
Okay. But that's, let's see. So does R6 zoned property, there was in a previous presentation, there was a slide that had three different types of zoning districts.
Yes.
And it had different percentages of open space.
Correct. So in
if you could help me clarify.
Yes. So in the residential service district, which also allows townhomes, patio homes, as well as apartments, it requires a 36% open space.
Can we bring up that power?
Yeah.
Yeah. Slide. It's the PowerPoint.
If you find the slide number, let me direct. So these are the open space requirements. Currently, it's 10% in R4, 35% in R6, and 36% in RS. But those are maintained within their districts, but a portion of them has to be rec based on whatever type of product they put in.
Okay, so the language that they're 10%, 35%, and 36% is still there in the code for this open space and recreation requirements.
Correct.
Okay, because when I looked at this slide and I read the code, I was thinking that this proposed recreation requirement was going to change the open space.
Yeah, no. Those are still, they're just under the districts. Yeah.
Okay, and they're still, I see it there. Okay, well, in that case, I will amend my motion to state, if it's okay, Mr. Mayor, I move to approve Ordinance 023-04, Proposed Code Amendments to Chapter 23, Chapter 26, Chapter 31, and other related sections of the Zoning Code, and to strike the words, decisions may be appealed to the Town Council from section, those numbers. Won't read them again. Based on the finding that this is in conformance with the General Plan and Strategic Leadership Plan. Councilmember Bohm, would you accept that amendment?
I accept.
Mr.
Councilmember Solomon.
I have a question. This may be for our legal staff on item F.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. Under when the motion is on the floor, you can only speak twice.
That's true. But I'm going to give Councilmember Solomon the opportunity to ask the question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm having some trouble tracking the numbers and letters. So this is a question regarding item F under table 26-2, recreation area amenities. And item F says the town council may require different amenities within a subdivision, multifamily or mixed use development to achieve more variety or approve amenities not specified in table 26-2, yet compatible in use, accessibility, and function. Does this effectively say when somebody's trying to design that really none of these design requirements and guidelines are meaningful because according to F, the council can just come in at the end and say, no, never mind, we want something different. This seems to be something that invalidates all the specificity of the rest of the ordinance.
Councilmember Sullivan, when I read that provision,
And when reading a town ordinance or any code, I try to read it holistically, as I believe that's what the canons of construction require. I think what it is saying is that when town council looks at a proposed plan, they may require changes in amenities based on the overall design, giving town council ultimate sort of discretion on the planning process to be able to look at the community, hear the needs of the community, and make changes. I believe that's the discretion being given to town council there.
Even if the applicant meets 100% the requirements in the code?
So again, I believe there's discretion here to town council on what those amenities can be. I think there are still code requirements that have to be met and that the applicant needs to meet those requirements. But in terms of the amenities, there's discretion to the council.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. Vice Mayor?
I'd like to call the question, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay?
Nay.
Aye.
The ayes have it, 5-2. Future agenda items? I move to adjourn the regular session.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Solomon. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to study session. It is in order. So we'll have Mr. Standish, if you'll read this item.
Discussion regarding Town of Oro Valley sponsorship policies for community events and tourism events and delegations of authority that allow the town manager to sign sponsorship agreements.
Community and Economic Development Director, Mr. Melcher, will present this item.
Thank you, Mayor Winfield, members of council. Tonight's study session topic is, as was described, we're here to discuss creating two distinct sponsorship policies, one for tourism-based events and one for community-based events, and then to make sure that we clarify the delegations of authority that allow the town manager to enter into agreements based on negotiated sponsorships. So town council might ask, why do we need sponsorship policies? One of the things that the Community and Economic Development Department has done since we were given the management and oversight of both tourism and special events is going through the processes in order to develop agreements coming out of the negotiated or the described event process review. Based on our experience, there have been a lot of agreements that were entered into through the town for sponsorships, but there was no paper trail or no agreements to provide for future reference. So when we were encountering groups that were looking to seek sponsorship again, there were a lot of misconceptions, misunderstandings. So our goals were simple as we move forward with these sponsorship policies. The first one was to create a very well-defined, specific policy and procedure for those applicants coming forward seeking a sponsorship. The second one was to make sure that we had templates that were presentable so that applicants knew as we moved forward, this is our basic template for a sponsorship agreement, all with the overall arching goal of improving the customer experience for both the town and our internal customer stakeholders, which would be the police department, Parks and Rec, Public Works, and our own CED, and then also those applicants who were seeking sponsorship support from the town. So when we were looking at these in terms of the sponsorship policies that you have before you tonight for discussion, we wanted to make sure that the applicants knew what were the foundational elements of the information that needed to be provided so that we can conduct a sufficient review in order to consider a sponsorship. We were also looking at what were the financial types of sponsorship that were being requested and the duration of that agreement to see what was the overall intent of the group or organization seeking the sponsorship. And finally, we wanted to ensure that both of the parties understood what the expected outcomes were. The town has very specific expectations in terms of what we'd like to see for marketing, branding, and just that financial return on our investment. But also, we look at this as a partnership with that applicant coming in to request a sponsorship. So we wanted to make sure that they were expressing their needs and what they had in terms of an outcome and wanted to see as well. In short, what this really refers to is this partnership that we want to develop, because ultimately we want all the events that come forward from Oro Valley, either a tourism or a community event, to be successful. They both have their unique goals and objectives, but that is really what we're trying to do, because we want that partnership to succeed and be able to look for the future years and continue that relationship. So again, the goal is to have clearly defined obligations for both parties. What's the town going to provide and what's the party going to provide? We want to define what the town benefits are coming out of this agreement, both to understand what we would look for in terms of the gift clause to ensure that we're being the sponsorships that we're providing fall within the reasonableness expectations of the gift clause. But then we also want to have everything in an agreement to prevent creep. And what I mean by agreement creep is some of the agreements that we've encountered so far was, well, the town did this in the past. Can you do this? Or it's a late, quick addition to, hey, can you provide all these signs or do something? So that's part of our development of these agreements, is let's make sure that we have clear understanding on the outset, talk about all the needs, the goals, and objectives. And if there is something later that would come up in terms of an ask, that we would amend the agreement to reflect that so that everybody still maintains that clear understanding. And then finally, we wanted to ensure that we have that post and pre and post event meetings. The pre-meetings go through so that we have an internal review by all the town departments that are impacted, including Golder, the Golder Fire District, is one of our partners in this, but to make sure that we have that really good internal review. And then when we have the post-event meeting, is to go back and look to see, with all the goals and objectives and the financial considerations that we had included in agreement, did we meet those? If we can do it better, how do we make improvements? And in those areas where we did excel, how do we even make them better for the next event? Again, we have two distinct type of tourism policies. As you note with the list under the tourism policy, it's very specific to economic development. And if you look down there, the two bullet points that I would draw your attention to focus on the estimated economic impact and then the tourism marketing and branding efforts that we have. I'd also say, from a tourism perspective, we aren't capping the duration or the amount of sponsorship for those tourism events, thinking that as those progress, our ultimate goal would be to reduce the amount of sponsorship overall, but we might have a 3 or 5 year program that we're looking at in terms of what we're trying to do with a specific sponsorship. I'll get into that a little bit more in the next slide, but in the community event, our goal here is to make sure that we, for those community events that we're really looking at a gathering, it's arts, it's culture, it's very specific to the quality of life initiatives that we have for Oro Valley. So we want those agreements to reflect that. So it's to get fledgling events to get up and started, 3 year, $2,500 cap to get them up and started, hoping with the eventuality is that those are able to subsist on their own. I would also say that a community event, given the encouragement or the long-term view of the event producer, could become a tourism event. And again, I'll explain that here shortly. In terms of how we score based on what's included in the policy, again, you'll notice, and the emphasis on economic impact and branding constitutes 70% of the score for any tourism sponsorship application that the town would receive. So that's really our emphasis. And you'll even note within the economic impact that we determined ratios on how we could score some of them. So if we look at the Tucson Bicycle Classic, which staff reported the economic impact there, you're looking at roughly a 7.3 to 1 ratio in terms of our investment that we made in terms of overall sponsorships to the return that we received for that event. Contrary to that, the community event sponsorship hasn't focused mostly on quality of life and branding. Now, branding is mentioned twice here, but the branding for the tourism is really focused on developing Oro Valley as a unique tourist destination. In this case, I could reference that we're looking to establish Oro Valley as a cycling, training, and racing, we'll just call it a mecca for lack of a different word, but that's the notoriety that we want to gain through that branding effort. For the community event, we wanted to brand Oro Valley as a unique cultural, artistic, really fantastic place for quality of life, because we also use that in economic development as a marketing tool. So for those prospective companies coming in, we want to use that as a focus and demonstrate not only is this a great place to work, but look at all of the quality of life initiatives that the town can boast for those employees who might be either transferring or moving to Oro Valley. So I wanted to provide you two examples, and I referenced the Tucson Bicycle Classic a little bit already. But overall, based on the sponsorship money, about $25,000 was utilized to sponsor this first race. We knew that we were looking for a long-term objective here again to create Oro Valley's reputation as a premier cycling destination. So through that, the town provided $6,000 of sponsorship. Through our Visit Tucson allocation of sponsorship money, they provided $15,000 and the chamber provided $4,000. So again, you can see that we had very defined benefits based on the slide deck that was for the sponsorships, that we were one of the premier sponsors. Certainly, I think it was a great day event. The mayor and other council members participated, the ride-alongs, all of those things that we achieved out of there, because I would say in terms of a partnership, what we've already developed is Team Echelon is going to be coming to Oro Valley. They're a preeminent pro cycling team from Detroit, so they're coming to have their golf outing banquet, and they're going to do a Grand Fondo where we're going to participate with Marana to have a ride from Oro Valley to Marana and back. So you're really looking at all of the benefits that we'll get from that. And we even might have another mechanics clinic coming in to Oro Valley as an offshoot. So this is a very specific USA bicycling partnership that we have. But already in 2 years, it's developed beyond our expectations, even to the point where we're hoping to increase ridership by about 10% for the actual event over this last year. And if we continue with developing it in partnership with Marana, then you get more room night stays in the northern part of Pima County versus having it kind of split between, you know, Sahuarita has one of the segments, Vail had one of the segments in Oro Valley. So comparing that to Rockin' for Heroes, we entered into an agreement. So the Rockin' for Heroes event was in October 15th, just happened last weekend. We've sponsored them for 1 year at $2,500. I would also reference this, though, that Rockin' for Heroes, as they came forward with their preliminary sponsorship request, had given the proposal or the idea that they would like to have a future discussion about expanding this to a possible 2 or 3 day event, having additional entertainment venues, opportunities, additional retail, all of that to make it a larger event that would bring out-of-town visitors. If that's the case and there's going to be a way to demonstrate possible additional room nights based on that, then we might convert what would be a community event sponsorship over into a tourism sponsorship and see how that might be a unique Oro Valley specific event. You'll notice in the staff report the agenda quick item that we wanted to make sure that we also clarified who was able to enter into agreements. So as we look at this, the town council has provided budget authority and allocation through the budget for $40,000 in tourism sponsorships and attractions. Staff has split that up into $30,000 allocated for specific tourism sponsorships and $10,000 for community events. So as we move forward and we receive applications, we would process those, present the findings to the town manager, have the town manager sign those agreements, and then move forward in that fashion. So the future item agendas that would be generated from our discussion tonight would be very simple. We're just looking to establish individual policies, one for the tourism events, one for sponsorship events, and to make sure and have it understood that the town manager has the delegated authority to enter into those agreements via the budget allocations. Mayor and members of council, that's my presentation. I'd be happy to take any comments you might have for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. Appreciate your presentation. We'll open it to questions from council. Councilmember Bowen.
I have a question regarding sponsorship of the Bicycle Classic.
Yes.
If I heard you correctly, 25,000, 15,000 came from Visit Tucson, and 10,000 came from the Chamber of Commerce. Is that correct?
Councilmember Bowen, 15 came from Visit Tucson, 4,000 came from the Chamber, and 6,000 came from the town out of our direct budget.
Now, the return of the money that we pay to Visit Tucson, my understanding is we pay Visit Tucson $400,000 a year, and yet we've been struggling to get them to come in here and talk about that agreement. I'm trying to find out, from your point of view, if we get sponsorship money from them, is that from a different pool of money, or is that just them actually returning $15,000 of the $400,000 we pay them each year?
Melcher, when answering the question, if you can keep it related to the sponsorship agreement portion, I don't believe we're agendized to discuss allocation of Visit Tucson money.
Sure, thank you. Councilmember Bowen, I think the succinct answer is through the current agreement, we've made sure and ensured that Visit Tucson allocated $60,000 specific to the Town of Oro Valley incentives, and 20,000 of that is mutually agreed. So we utilized that $20,000 that we as staff and as Visit Tucson discussed, we mutually agreed that that was what we wanted to utilize it, and that's how we utilized that.
So there was a mutual agreement, but it's not clear to me from your response, you know, was my question actually answered? Is that just a return of our own funds, or is that a new allocation from them to us? That's all the question was.
Councilmember Bowen, that would be included. The allocation is $410,000. So as part of that, we wanted to make sure the allocation ensured specific uses. How about that?
Okay. And then secondly, you know, in terms of this new request, can you kind of describe for us how this will make your department more effective? You know, we have an existing way of doing this. If we were to move forward with a motion, a future motion, how can you describe for us how it will make you be more effective, more efficient, and that the residents and the council will like the results as opposed to what we're doing right now?
Sure. Thank you for the question. Councilmember Bowen, I'd reference this slide again. So as we move forward, it's a very structured program where the applicants know exactly what information is necessary for us to be able to consider a sponsorship request. And each one of the separate policies has specifics detailed to what information that we need to see. Then we move it forward in terms of the discussion about what's the amount. Can our budget actually withstand or support the request that's being made? So all of these requests will be subject to any budget allocations. So initially we get all the information. We can make a very specific decision based on that information, looking at all of those parameters. And then finally, we also measure it against our tourism initiatives, our branding, whatever qualifications we're looking for at that event to ensure that we're just not sponsoring any one-off. It really does follow and fit within the strategic plan, our tourism plan, and other plans that we might reference.
Thank you. And within the fiscal year 23-24 budget, would you happen to know offhand, do we have an allocation of sponsorship money that belongs to the town, not from Visit Tucson, but an allocation that we keep and we can use throughout the year?
Yes, Councilmember Bowen. So overall, the council allocated $90,000 to support tourism objectives. $40,000 of that goes to attractions and sponsorships. Staff split it this year at 30 and 10. The budget doesn't split it that way. We just did it for our estimates, figuring these are the sponsorships we provided in the past. This is what we anticipate coming in. So we could always adjust that within the 30 if we get more requests on the tourism side of it versus the community support side of it. So So the short answer is $40,000 for those initiatives.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. Those are my questions.
Councilmember Green.
Thank you, Paul. It's good. I think this is a great idea. I think the other thing that's embedded in this is that you'd be able to give people a timely manner rather than the feeling that they're getting a runaround from the town. So I think this is a good thing. Something like you did a comparison of the Rockin' for Heroes. Rockin' for Heroes registers where people come from as they come through the gate. And so we have a really good idea how many of them are out of the county or out of state or where. The other thing that Rockin' for Heroes does is that if they make any money on it, up to now, it's come back to the town, to one of our charities or, for example, the park, the Memorial Park in Naranja. And are we using any kind of criterion like that for other things that we look at?
Mayor and Councilmember Green, we're not utilizing that specific criteria to designate where the funds go after the fact. We do have criteria in terms of the qualifications for the organization that it can't be politically affiliated and other considerations that are included in the policy, but that's not one of the things that we look at. It's more what does the event do for the event overall versus any philanthropic interest that might be attached with it.
Mr. Melcher, one of the objectives is to, at least on the community event side, is to address creep. And that seems to be addressed by that three-year requirement, right, that we'll sponsor for 3 years and then that's it? Is that what I understand?
Mr. Mayor, thank you for the question. The creep that I'm referencing is the inability to identify all the parties' obligations via a handshake agreement versus having it in writing. So, you know, let's go back. There were some of the previous agreements had referenced the town providing things that, frankly, we weren't aware, or people that were employees at the time were providing, and now those employees are no longer here. We don't have reference or record of what was provided specifically. So this is really our opportunity to shore up what those expectations are regarding anything that we provide and then our expectations for them. But to your point about the 3 year, it's really to make sure that that event is working as hard as it can to get established, thinking that if the event isn't self-sustaining in 3 years, then I think it's everybody's going to look at it and say, well, then we gave it a shot. We understood what we were looking for in terms of that investment, but it just didn't pan out.
Okay. So I did misunderstand. I thought the creep was we agreed to participate 1 year, and then we find ourselves 10 years later in something that we, you know, a bad marriage that we wanted to get out of, but somehow we can't.
Well, certainly it doesn't commit us beyond 1 year. I referenced the Tucson Bicycle Classic as a two-year agreement because we knew that this is a brand-new event. We wanted to secure it for Oro Valley. How do we look at this to make sure that we have that post-event discussion to ensure success for the next year or improvements? But to your point, if there's an event that comes through and it's, let's just say it's a complete flop for whatever reason, that doesn't commit us to anything after a year.
And so why the three-year limit on the community event but no limit on the tourism side?
Again, if we have a tourism partnership, let's say for the Tucson Bicycle Classic, we might have a five-year strategy where there's a tourism objective we want to meet. So phase one is getting the circuit race in Oro Valley. Phase two might be securing training Olympic-style events, something like that. Phase three might be post-Olympic training. I'm just kind of giving you a shot here. So we might have a 4 or 5 year relationship that we're trying to build, not only with the Tucson Bicycle Classic, but it could be USA Cycling. U of A has triathlon teams now. So there are a variety of ways that we can use and expand this relationship versus, you're right, we might have, let's just say, Rockin' for Heroes, 3 years. We want to build this relationship to a certain point, and then that's it, because we know as a community event we want it to be self-sustaining. Did that answer your question?
I mean, yes and no, but I mean, as you take the Rockin' for Heroes, I mean, they don't, there's no fee, right? If they open that, it's a free event. And it seems like they're, at least, what they're doing is trying to actually get more sponsorships, not less sponsorships. I mean, that's how they, that's kind of their business model. And so I have a mild concern if we have, you know, if it's here in the town, that if we somehow have said, well, we're only going to be sponsors for this for 3 years, and maybe I shouldn't use Rocking for Heroes, but let's just... Then after that 3 years, then they may say, or somebody else says, well, we're going to take our event to another community that will sponsor us, that will be a partner in this. So, yeah, what are your thoughts about that?
Thank you, Mayor Winfield. I think it's always at the discretion of council. This is a proposal to town council. If you'd like to take out or amend the cap, then I'm all open to it. That's the purpose for the study session. When the town manager and I set about looking at the standard, we just thought that sometimes you might get a flurry of community-based type events and requests. So having a cap on it might encourage those events to make sure that they are doing, as you said, securing more sponsors and making themselves self-sustainable. But if you would like to consider an event like Rockin' for Heroes or something similar where you'd like a sponsorship in perpetuity, then or at least extends beyond 3 years. How about that? Certainly that's what we're here to get that feedback from you.
Just one more. So on the tourism side, there's the economic impact is a important component. I mean, it does seem like that's an element of the community event as well, but it's not as emphasized as it is with the tourism, right?
Mayor Winfield, that's correct.
And so it would seem that, you know, in terms of just that, you know, year after year, there ought to be an increasing economic benefit to the town to justify that, you know, continuing investment, right? We don't want to continue investing and see that economic impact, you know, going trending downwards versus, yeah. So to me, that would be a way to measure that there's, you know, year after year growth, so to speak.
And Mayor Winfield, I think that speaks a little bit to Councilmember Green's point about the demographic information after the fact. So that's what we also used with the Tucson Bicycle Classic to do an estimate of out-of-town stays, understanding where were the origins of all of these teams or any of the individual racers. But we're also doing the same thing for the Oro Valley Triathlon in terms of looking at their sponsorship, is figuring out how do we encourage them to reach out to more areas to encourage participants. For example, New Mexico seems to be a real hot spot for the Oro Valley Triathlon. So we could do some specific marketing that area, other places, Colorado and California, to increase out-of-town participation in that. So to your point, there are a lot of elements that we're using on the back end. We do post-event surveys of the participants, too, and that'll be key to us figuring out. We know how many booked room nights originate from either the El Conquistador or the Westward Look or Limited Service because we actually ask them to do a contract with them for a certain amount of room nights. But for those that choose short-term rentals or other things, we want that post-event survey to demonstrate how many of those participants stayed in which facility and where. And that gives us a better sense of how do we market staying in Oro Valley and using it as the headquarters for both the race and for participant stays.
Okay. Vice Mayor's asked for the floor. Councilmember Green, if I just have her speak, and then we'll go to you, Vice Mayor.
Okay, thank you. I think it's a good idea to have the policy a little bit more explicitly laid out because it gives the town a little bit more ability to be clear and to be consistent. I do have some concern anytime we take people's money, the public money, and we use it for a non-public purpose, even though it is a public purpose, we're giving it to an organization outside the town. We're not using it to fund town-owned amenities or employees or et cetera. I think that requires kind of a high level of scrutiny to make sure that those economic impacts are being met, to make sure the money is being used correctly, et cetera. So I think it's good. I actually am concerned about creep because in the 5 years in the creep that the mayor was talking about earlier, because in the 5 years now that I've been on council, we haven't once reduced the money that has been going to any organization that I know of or ended a sponsorship or something. So I just feel like when these sponsorships begin, it is difficult to end them because people become to rely on that money. They're looking for that to continue moving forward. And so I kind of like the 3-year limitation that it's an agreement up front that this is for 3 years. And then after that, you know, you need to have the event become self-sufficient just because I think that that clarifies for people who are receiving sponsorships where they're coming from. So that's my perspective on that. And then with regard to the public money and not being politically affiliated, I think that because it's public money, those who receive sponsorships should, you know, they and their board not be donating to Oro Valley elections. Because I think that that makes them politically affiliated here in the town. If they're donating to PACs and if they're donating to candidates, and then they're politically affiliated and partisan here in the town. So if they're taking the town's public money, then I think a limitation like that is appropriate to make sure that the public money is just going to, you know, causes that are arm's length transaction and the tourism related type of things that show an economic impact and community events that are for the community as a whole and nonpartisan. So those are my thoughts on that. And I could see a case where a community event might require ongoing sponsorship, but I am concerned about creep in that way because, you know, we'll say we have an agreement for 3 years or we have an agreement for 4 years and then that agreement ends and the people come and speak to the council and, you know, then their agreement gets extended another 3 years or another 4 years. And so, anyway, so you just have to be careful what money you start to hand out because it's harder to stop that is my observation. And that's just true of the government in general. So anyway.
Councilmember Green.
Thank you. I can see a reason for caps, but I'm sort of opposed to it. I'd prefer to look at an event as quickly as possible, analyze it as thoroughly as possible, and make a decision at that point whether you want to go on with it or not. I think having a 2-year or a 3-year cycle gives you a chance to say no just because of the timeline. Regarding the creep, there's a couple kinds of creep. There's coming back and asking for more things. A lot of that has to do with the police department. Some of it's controlled by the organization, some of it is not. For example, in the Rockin' for Heroes, there was a request for private security for Gabby Gifford and her entourage. And, you know, is the town going to pay for that? Is the police force going to provide it? It's money. And so I think we do need to be aware of the creep, and we need to let as much of the creep be borne by the organization that's hosting the event.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I just want to mention one thing, too. As far as using people, you know, the public's money, we talked about a 7-to-1 ratio earlier, but, you know, it's really a 40-to-1 ratio. So if we, you know, spend $100 of taxpayers' money, or if we spend $2.50 of taxpayers' money, we really want to get $100 of someone spending money on hot dogs or something like that in Oro Valley. Because if they spend $100, 2.5% of that revenue goes back to our tax coffers. So that's $2.50. So it's a 40-to-1 ratio. With that being said, it does make a difference if they're spending that money on Amazon, where that money goes to the shareholders in New York or California, or mom and dad's bicycle shop, where that money stays in Oro Valley's economic. So there's benefit to that if it's not reaching that 40-to-1 ratio. But it's just something all the council should keep in mind when we do give public money to sponsor events. But the other thing is, too, community gets to have fun. I mean, we lose money on golf. We lose money on the Aquatic Center. So events, you want to live in Oro Valley, you spend a little bit of money to live in Oro Valley, and you want to go do some fun things. So that's also should be considered. But
other questions, comments? So in regards to creep, You mentioned how a community event can, I thought it was creeping out of that into tourism so it could get back into the flow of cash.
I kind of regret tossing that word out there.
Love that word.
But so a community event may evolve into a tourism event. And it probably doesn't matter, Mr. Melcher, but is it, can a tourism event evolve into a community event? In other words, it doesn't really pan out economically in terms of its impactfulness, but the community loves it. We can't justify continuing to support it at $25,000, but we could, maybe support it at a lower. I'm just curious. In your presentation, community event can evolve to tourism. Can tourism evolve into a community?
Mayor Winfield, I'd say anything might be possible, and that would be the easiest way to say that. But I would also say the cap is at 25. It doesn't mean that we have to commit 25 to each one. So that we're just looking at it from that perspective. It could be a smaller amount based on whatever that need is, but. Yes, so I just wanted to make sure that was understood, that it's not just an automatic 25, it is up to $2,500.
Sure, I think that's great. I think if we find ourselves, we may want to consider that we actually reduce the amount. So maybe we, and I don't know that it makes sense to necessarily start at 2,500, the first year. Maybe that's what's needed, but then that second year, so that it's known that then that it's $1,750, and then that third year it's $750 or whatever. I mean, the whole idea is that we're trying to help this group become self-sustaining, that we're not necessarily wanting to sustain the group, right?
And Mayor Winfield, thank you for the comments. I can understand what you'd be talking about. I think what we're looking here is the budget and the allocation that we're given. We want to take in consideration on a case-by-case basis. You're right. It would be very structured to do that, but it also might handcuff us in such a way that we might not anticipate.
That's
so
true.
I'm just thinking that as long as we cap it, that should give the town council the surety that for any one community event, we're not going to overextend. That's the goal and objective, is to make sure that they're self-sustainable. And then I think the other thing that I would toss in here that may not be apparent is reporting on these events as part of either the weekly report, the town manager and I can come up with something, post-event analyses, those kind of things. Just it's either the executive report, some kind of special report, or something to let town council know the results of an event.
That would be extremely helpful.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, Councilmember Nicholson.
I want to mention something that's even more important than the money is just the ease of doing events. Like, I think there a lot of people would do more events if they knew how to go about doing it. Like, I don't know if there's a way to work with the chamber or whatever to help all these events that go on in Oro Valley, maybe work with people that do events in Tucson, have like a system. Here's a pamphlet. Here's how you do events. You need insurance. You need police officers. You need this. This is the cost. These are vendors that can help you do. Here's food trucks. List of food trucks. Like, we should work with the Chamber of Oro Valley. We should work with the Chamber of Tucson and the Economic Development Director of Tucson, like create like literally a pamphlet, a network on Facebook or something, like a group so these people can get together. And like, I think a lot of these people, like, the bigger ones, the large El Tour de Tucson, got it figured out, right? But someone else trying to start another tourism, you're getting $2,500. Really matter a lot more than that is like a pathway of how to do it. I mean, $2,500 doesn't mean a whole lot when you got, hundreds if not thousands of volunteer man hours to try and get things done. And a lot of these people just struggle to get the things off the ground. Once they're off the ground, they're making, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's a little bit better. But I think if there was a way to make it easier for people to start, just like starting a business, the chamber helps people start a business. Maybe there's something we can do with the chamber here in Tucson to, like, help start events. But.
So Mayor Winfield and Councilmember Nicholson, we actually have something of that type already with our portal. We converted everything from doing a laserfish type where it was a pull-down selection. So we took the concepts that we have for both business license and permitting, and incorporated that application for special events onto our portal. So now we have the ability to cohesively do all the intake of the special event application. Then it's distributed internally to the team where they can look at it electronically, drop comments in there very efficiently, effectively. We don't have to send it out, send reminders, and get those comments back out to the applicant that quickly. It has been a bit of a learning curve because in the past, without sometimes the applications were filled out by staff because we were just trying to make it expedited for the applicant going through, so they didn't really learn. So Andrew Fairbanks, he's our tourism strategies coordinator, has been doing a lot of hand-holding, getting them go through the process so that they understand the first time, so the second time it'll be much easier for them to go through that. So to your point, yes, there's been a little bit of a teaching element going on for our frequent and return applicants, but we've seen a lot of success by just getting them in the portal and having them understand how easy it is to make the application.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. We appreciate you taking the lead on this and for the presentation, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Mayor, if I could just ask a qualifying question.
Sure.
There was a little bit of discussion about the cap. Is there any general direction from town council that you'd, you know, any change in the cap or any change in the duration of years, or did you want to remove the duration and just have it case by case? Is there anything consistent that you'd like to see with the return policies?
Councilmember Green.
I would like to see a rapid yearly review. And if you want to keep the cap in place, you know, make it 3 years or something like that, but you could end it earlier if they're not performing to your standards.
Right. The 3 years isn't an obligation. It's up to 3 years. Okay. Thank you.
So $2,500, is that the cap you're looking for?
If town council's,
I think
we're good with it from staff if town council's acceptable.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your input.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. We appreciate everybody's participation tonight. We'll conclude our study session and let everybody get home. Thank you.